call this meeting to order. Will everybody please rise for the invocation and pledge of allegiance? Our most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us all here today. Please be with our residents. Please be with our city employees. Please guide this meeting this evening. In your name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The city of Kirby is dedicated to delivering excellent municipal services to our community in a fiscally responsible manner. Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Pierce?
Here.
Councilmember Grant?
Here.
Councilmember Lehman?
Here.
Councilmember Wilson? Councilmember Apodaca?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldred? She let us know she wouldn't be in attendance. Mayor Pierce?
Here.
Have a quorum.
All right, we will move to item 5, citizens' participation. We have Chris Garza at 4807 Michael Collins regarding fixing the pool picnic area.
Hello. Hi. My name is Chris Garza. I run a Facebook group of residents called Kirby Community. And it was brought to our attention that the tables at the Barcarian near the pool need a facelift. The community decided they wanted to do a community project. So we wanted to update the area by replacing the boards with picnic tables and revitalizing everything with paint, stain, pressure washing, that area. So the Kirby community, we believe we can do this through fundraising the Kirby community helping us. We just need permission from the city council to follow through with a few projects that we would like to undertake. A group of us is committed to doing it at no cost to the city. We just need to make sure that we would not have to pay the city for permitting, water usage, for the pressure washing, and we would like to have use of the facilities that day when we finish to invite the community out to come see the finished product. Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay, Miss Willie Mae Clay on 4815 Dick Gordon. Accessible platform needed at bus stop Charles Conrad and Old Seguin. That's fine if you want to. And bus stop outbound.
Yes.
Oh, whatever. Okay.
I'll tell you in a second.
Okay.
If you can't do it, I understand.
Maybe inputting Kirby City long range plan for trees. Was that it?
Input into the Kirby long-term plan.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. My name is Gordon and Plan. As the mayor indicated, I was on the board of line. The last time I attended the meeting and spoke to citizens to be heard, it was in June 13th of this year. And I asked that at that intersection that Charles Conrad was getting that the platform that was there before when the bus stop was there
right. Miss Barbara Connor on Alan Bean. And I'm not really sure where it's at right here. Yes.
Not enough room. Not enough room.
I know. Well, it's fine. Yeah. You know, when I went to school, you can.
Yes. Thank you very much. All right, number 4 and 5 are BJ Voigt at 3634 Kirby and Charlene Wyatt at 3106 Buzz Aldrin. And after that is Sharon Schuler at 3110 Buzz Aldrin. And BJ and Charlene have deferred their minutes to Ms. Schuler regarding the recent activity at the Springfield development.
Good evening. My name is Sharon Schuler. I live at 3110 Buzz Aldrin, and the back of my property backs up to the Springfield development. That's located on the corner of Springfield and Binfield. I want to say thank you to BJ and Charlene for allowing me to have their minutes tonight as well. At the City Council meeting on June 27th, I asked for assistance both for myself and my neighbors that the city assist us with the problem has been created by Big Boy Hauling. Since I spoke at the June 27th meeting, the situation seems to have gotten worse instead of better. Big Boy Hauling obviously is not concerned with working with the citizens of Kirby, as demonstrated by their lack of consideration in working both in the evenings and on weekends. On June 28th, the day after I spoke at a city council meeting, I worked from home. There was no activity behind me all day. At approximately 5:10 on the Big Boy property, someone started up a large front-end loader, scraping the ground where there was a patch of weeds. After scraping, the operator would lift the front end and drop a small load on the ground, going back and forth doing this, banging and clanging and beeping. This went on for at least 30 minutes before I had to leave my home. On Saturday, July 6th, the noise disturbance started around 9:30 a.m. I did take video of someone operating an excavator, moving the dead tree and branches that had been sitting on the property, banging, clanging, and beeping while dumping the debris into a gravel hauler. I do not know how long it lasted, but I left around 10:45 a.m. and was not able to return home until 8:30 p.m. On Sunday, July 7th, the noise disturbance started again around 9:30 a.m. I made the first of two calls to dispatch and spoke to Chris to inquire if Officer Scurlock was on duty, because he had come out previously when my neighbor had called dispatch, so he was familiar with our situation. I was advised he came on at 3 p.m. and I could call back. And said he had received the message and was making his way there. We discussed the nuisance noise ordinance, and we decided that Mayor Pierce would pursue the nuisance noise ordinance with the city manager. Now there are more piles of dirt behind us, and now I have an entire row of gravel trailers behind my fence. This week I read chapter 94 in its entirety. I would like to point out the following. Chapter 94, nuisances. Article 2, noise. 94.1, definition. Noise nuisance. Any loud, irritating, vexing, or disturbing noise which causes distress, annoyance, discomfort, or injury to, or which interferes with the comfort and repose of any person of normal nervous sensibilities in the vicinity or hearing thereof. 94.16, noise nuisance prohibited. It shall be unlawful for any person to intentionally and knowingly create, cause, permit, or allow to be created, caused or permitted a noise nuisance within the corporate limits of the city or within 5,000 feet thereof. 94.17, acts creating unlawful noises. The following acts, among others not hereinafter enumerated, are declared to be noise nuisances, unlawful and a violation of the provisions of this subchapter when such acts are done or accomplished or carried on in such a manner or with such volume, intensity, or with continued duration, so as to annoy, to distress, or to disturb the quiet, comfort, or repose of persons of normal nervous sensibilities within the vicinity of hearing thereof. Letter D. Continued or frequent sounding of any horn or other signal device on any automobile or vehicle, motorcycle, bus, or other vehicle, except as a danger or warning signal. Letter G. The erection, including excavation, demolition, alteration, or repair work on any building or other structure, other than between the hours of 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. on weekdays, except in cases of extreme and urgent necessity in the interest of or for the public safety and convenience, and then only by permit obtained from and issued by the city secretary or any city employee designated by the secretary, which permit may be renewed during the time the emergency exists. Letter N. It shall be unlawful for any person to create, maintain, or cause any ground or airborne vibration which is perceptible without instruments at any point on any affected property adjoining the property in which the vibration source is located. Letter X. Identification of violator. The persons responsible for violations of this division are identified as follows. Number one, at private residences. Number two, at business locations. Any business owner, operator, manager, employee in charge, and all persons in control or in possession of the noise nuisance generating instrument or property at the time of the offense. Even though there is no building on the property yet, Big Boy Hauling is running a business on and out of that property. The noise continues to be a large concern at any time Big Boy is in operation, both AM and PM. And thank you, Mayor, for coming out to witness this firsthand. Mayor, I also ask for your assistance in providing someone who can interpret the city ordinances when the city manager and or city attorney are not available after hours and on weekends. We cannot expect our city public officers to understand and interpret these complex laws without assistance from either the city manager and or the city attorney. We were hoping to have responses to our questions provided at the last meeting so we can see a continuous progress in resolving the issue which are seriously affecting citizens, including the children in our community of Purdue. I have not heard back from the city regarding the progress of resolving this nuisance of our city and neighborhood, but I have no doubt that the city officials have been working diligently to resolve all the problems discussed at the last council meeting about the property that Big Boy Hauling currently occupies. Mayor, I have asked for the city council's assistance, the city manager's assistance, and I'm asking for the city attorney's assistance in finding solutions to this problem that has been created by Big Boy Hauling. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you. Number seven, Mr. Garcia at 4 Fort Edelin Street. Do you want to wait till that item or do you want to talk now?
I'll wait a minute.
Okay. Mr. Bob Scheel at 111 Peppermint regarding street drainage on Ackerman Road to Kirby Drive.
Good evening. My name is Bob Scheel, 111 Peppermint.
consider extending the road work on Peppermint from Ackerman to Kirby Drive to where we can eliminate the drainage problem and solve that issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, if you would like to give them our city secretary, she can make sure that all of us get a copy of that. Thank you so much. And Roger Romans at 4827 Neil Armstrong regarding 7K. Would you like to speak now or wait? Okay. All right, so that concludes everyone with the exception of Mr. Garcia and Mr. Romans. Mr. Garcia will speak momentarily, and then Mr. Romans will speak at 7K. Item 6, consideration and action on minutes of June 27th. I will entertain a motion.
Make a motion. We accept the minutes June 27th, 2019.
We have a motion by Councilmember Lehman, seconded by Councilmember Grant to accept the regular minutes of June 27th. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please raise your right hand. All right, we will move to item 7A, discussion and possible action on a request to rezone property from the current zoning of commercial district C2 to multiple family dwelling district R2. The property is located at lot 20B, block 3, CB5941, known as 4114, Edelin Street, Kirby, Texas, 78219, Bexar County, Texas. Mr. Garcia?
Good evening, my name is Jose Garcia. I'm a small business owner at 415 Edelin Street. And I just have an opinion regarding the rezoning of that particular property. And here a map that I'll need copies for you all to see when you get a chance. That particular property on Edelin is in a C2 zoning, which is a prime commercial zoning that the city has allowed for business. That's one, that's like my main concern. And the second observation that I have is this particular property get rezoned as a residential, you have several families living there, might not be the best atmosphere for these families because they're surrounded by many businesses. And sometimes when you own business, you have to work after hours and weekends, and that might cause not a good atmosphere for a family. And I believe that's one of the main reasons that the city rezoned this area as a commercial zone. That's the only observation that I have for you all tonight.
Thank you.
Now we can talk to you.
We have the application for variance for the specific use request from Ms. Norma Rosales. Are you sure? Is Ms. Rosales?
So.
Is Ms. Rosales here? Okay, well, then I guess we will discuss without her.
There you go.
All right, so before us, we have a variant-specific use request, as the agenda item is to rezone the property from the current zoning of Commercial District C2 to Multiple Family Dwelling District R2. The property, as mentioned, is located at 414 Edelin, which is by FM 78 and Janky. And on the property is listed as 724 square feet. However, the house has been, 726.
Mm-hmm.
The house is actually on for sale, or the property is for sale. And actually on the actual websites, on the different realtor pages, the house is actually advertises 1,400 square feet. So there have been improvements to that property in addition, and quite largely larger than what is actually stated on this application. So I didn't receive any permit notices, so I don't know, has there been any permit applications for that property to your knowledge?
No, ma'am, only for the roof.
Only for the roof.
Well, Mayor, if I may say, they applied for, it said multiple family. I thought it...
It did say multiple because there's also asking that an additional house being built to, yes. It says, I would like to have authorization to be allowed to add another variance to C2, such as rental property, in addition of another house at the back for multi-housing.
So, in other words, okay... Is the back part of the property still also C2? I believe it is.
The whole property is located as C2.
And they want to put another house on a house that's already 1,400 square feet.
It's already been added to without knowledge from the city.
Also on that same website, it's showing it listed as a business.
Yes, it does. On the website, it does.
That's a business.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I think we've discussed this before. We're trying to maintain as much commercial property as we can. And when this was zoned, I know for a fact the reason being so that if a business wanted to build up on 78 and extend the property and have access to property behind them across Edelin, so that they would have increased area to operate a business out of or whatever. So if we just picked one piece out of that whole 400 block and zoned it, then that would, I think, be defeating the reason of why we're having commercial property.
And, you know, that is one of the goals for the city as well, to keep as much commercial property as possible, just to allow businesses to come in. Understandably, maybe a business isn't attracted to that specific property because even though the realtor advertisement say that it is a business, it's a great place, it is styled as a home. I mean, there's umpteen dozen pictures that actually have bathrooms and houses. So this actually, there was another zoning request just at the last P&Z meeting that was denied for the very same reason, because of the fact that the goal is to keep commercial property.
Well, did I not read in a handwritten application that this lady put out something about the fact that it was too small to handle a business? Well, if it's too small to handle a business, how can you put two houses?
On the website, it states that
they... Well, no, there were, yeah. But did you see that handwritten application that came through that she wrote on that said that she couldn't operate a business there? Hardship.
So
that's what it was. Yes.
Homes. It's primarily homes around this property. It will be a hardship to the owner to put a retail or car lot or storage at this property.
Why?
She's unfortunately not here to ask. So.
Well, rhetorically, I guess. Yes. We'll talk to the chair then. Correct.
Exactly.
Well, may I tell you what? I don't know. I don't think this takes a lot of brain work. I think that I would make a motion that we deny it.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Pierce, to deny the rezone request from commercial C2 to residential R2. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right, item 7B, presentation, discussion, and possible action on the 2019 City Street Assessment and Maintenance Plan with M&S Engineering.
Good evening, council members and city staff. My name is Craig Wilson. I'm a professional engineer with M&S Engineering. And I was involved in the task of putting together this report for the 2019 street assessment and 3-year maintenance plan. Well, we have to practice this. Let's see if I can manage to work this. Glad to be here tonight. Thank you for allowing me to be here. The city manager asked that I come by what we've done in our report. So I'll start as an introduction. Our task in doing this work was, first of all, to assess the conditions of the street. Secondarily, we would provide an analysis of what that data collection showed us. And then we would propose a three-year maintenance plan and finally identify apparent street drainage issues. The bulk or the totality of my presentation is going to cover the first two items. The three-year maintenance plan is in an appendix in the report that you have in front of you. Also, the some areas that we identified as having drainage issues, that list, a short list, is in your packet as well. So I'm going to start off talking about the data collection efforts that we went through. To do the data collection, we had to have mostly dry roads and mostly sunny skies. What we did was we drove the streets in town. We had set up with a couple of cameras, cell phone, just our regular cell phone cameras. The camera would take an image every 10 feet that as we drove. And the company that we used to do the processing, they gave us the route. So the route was provided by Robotics, which is the company that did our analysis. Images taken every 10 feet, it didn't matter whether we were driving 5 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour. It would grab a picture every 10 feet. Images were geolocated, so it gives us a latitude, longitude of every photograph that was collected. And it was also timestamped. As far as the analysis, that analysis was provided by a vendor called Robotics. They're a new vendor to us. This is the second city that we are using there with. They're still growing and learning about their product. So far, so good. I think we're pretty pleased with what we're seeing. I hope y'all are. The analysis and all the data that was collected is web-based, so that just means you can go on. All of it is available through our website. City staff has been provided the login and password to see that, and we've shown them briefly what they can do to see all that data. Rating for each of the images, the image collected over 10 feet, it was given a 1 to 5, 1 being excellent and 5 being very poor. The ratings were over average, overall, block by block. As I go through, you'll see what I'm talking about. Only the pavement surface was evaluated. So the surface of the asphalt, whether it's cracked or potholes or anything visual that you can see, the photograph was evaluated. A lot of places you have undulations, depressions. Those are very hard to detect in photographs and were really not a big item in the evaluation as far as the images go. Excluded roadways, we took the roadways out that had planned improvements, like the Ackerman Road project and Ben's England. You know that Ben's England will be a good looking street when the contractor is through with their work. So here's an example, and all these images are straight out of your packet. So this first image on the left side here, it shows a Peppermint Lane between Kirby Drive and Gandy. Each of the dots, if you can see all the dots across Peppermint Lane, that's a location of each image that was taken. So every 10 feet, you're going to see a dot, and it's going to have a corresponding color. Dark green, light green, yellow, orange, and red. And it's pretty clear what all those colors are going to represent. Where the arrow is pointing there, the red arrow is pointing to a dot that's highlighted in blue. That dot is red, so it indicates a location where the image was rated 5. The image on the right side of the screen is an actual photograph. So when you click on that dot, it pulls up this image and tells you what the time standard is, where the location is, and what the rating is. I wish that picture was in a bigger scale so you could really take a close look at it. Because that's rated 5. It's a very poor condition. So gathering up all those individual There's nothing wrong. There's no problem. It's perfect. It looks like it hasn't even been driven on. Next photo. This is also a rating of 1. Let me see up there. There's some longitudinal cracking. I think there's just two longitudinal cracks. Even though it's a rating of 1, it says a maple tree, those are issues that you want to pay attention to and do minor, low-cost maintenance like crack sealing. You may not want to do it in year 1, but probably by the third year after road is built, you're going to see those cracks, and it's something you're going to want to start addressing. That way you can preserve your roadway for a very extended period of time. So looking at a street with a rating of 2, a little hard to see what's going on here. There's quite a bit more longitudinal cracking across the street where the rating 1 had 2 or 3 cracks. This is going to have significantly more. Over to this side of this area, we're starting to get some alligator cracking, so it's indicating there's some more deterioration of the pavement surface and possibly affecting the base material. Another street with rating of 2, you see a lot of the same things going on here. There's alligator cracking here in the bottom corner. Still quite a bit of longitudinal cracking. It looks like this street was had some sort of surface force years and years ago that is deteriorated to the point where it's just barely even noticed. Looking at a street with a rating of 3, I believe this is Gate Street. You can see the dark asphalt patches there. Somebody's come back, the city's come back in and done crack sealing on this, which is a very good thing. It'll help extend the life of the street. But there's also more cracks that have shown up since that last maintenance effort. There's the beginning of a pothole right here. There's a little bit of waviness across there. Hard to tell from the picture, but I've driven the street and I remember there was a little bit of an area that wasn't level. What you can't really see in this photo is pretty much this half of the road right in front of our truck is all alligator crack. So that little bit of alligator cracking has kind of spread across the road, so it's getting to the point where it really is time to pay some attention to that. Another road is rating 3. This is Akron Road, right where the pavement starts really getting crazy and you get a lot of up and down movement. You don't see a lot of the alligator cracking, but there's a lot of longitudinal cracking on the side. A lot of unlevelness in the pavement. I think that's probably from trash trucks driving on the side. Those are going to be your biggest and heaviest vehicles that affect your roadways. But as you can see from the image, you can't really tell that the roadway has got dips and bumps and it's not level. So that's a difficulty in doing this image analysis. So our efforts driving the street and taking notes, we put those ideas back in our minds so we can make our own adjustment to the rating to when we decide how to proceed with some maintenance issues. So moving on to rating 4, this is Todd Street. It's hard to see. There is a lot of longitudinal cracking. There's the surface force that was put down to maintain it is pretty well gone. There's you notice right here on the curb line, you can see the curb is dipping. So we've got some base layers going through that section of the road. So that tells you pretty well what a rating 4 is. Here's a rating 4 again. A lot of longitudinal cracking all the way across the street. On this side, you're seeing some heavy cracking. It's opening pretty wide, creating some base layers. Now here we're talking about the street's rated 5. This is Kirby Heights Drive, a little far drive. I can't remember which one it is. A tremendous amount of longitudinal cracking all up and down the street. Here in the corner, there's a good-sized pothole right here. Against this driveway, the edge of the pavement and the driveway are starting to crumble and show severe signs of severe deterioration. intersection, I can't remember exactly where this is, but there's a whole lot of surface that's deteriorated. There's some utility trenches that have been repaired, and a lot of surface issues here. But this is, this is one of the poorest spots, I would say, across the city. Moving on to number five, this is at Peppermint Street. It's an area where
it is.
This fellow earlier was talking about. You can see there's a good sized pothole right here in front of this driveway. It looks like the pavement is pretty much completely gone, and it holds water probably a fifth portion of the time. A lot of alligator cracking across there, some pothole repairs. This is a spot that's in serious need of maintenance and repair. This image is the image that we've got back from robotics after they processed the data. The chart on the right side kind of gives you an indication of where the ranges fell from very poor all the way down to excellent. I want to point out on this legend called planned projects. It's got no on the legend, but all the way throughout the drawing in this image, everywhere we have a planned project or one of the construction, that black outline is around it. So that lets you know that those roads are the ones that we remove from our consideration because we know they're going to be addressed in the near future. So maintenance methods. Like I said, for the Raven Street, Raven 1, that longitudinal cracking, notice I put a small dollar sign, $1 sign. Very cheap method, very inexpensive way to maintain your streets. You're just going to go high enough to fill in the cracks with rubberized emulsion. And that'll keep the water from infiltrating the surface and affecting the base material. A slurry seal is a bit more expensive. It's going to combine liquid asphalt with small aggregate like sand, real small gravel, and it's going to lay down across the whole street. It's not a chip seal, which you might be familiar with. It's just a thin layer of asphalt. It looks real pretty after it's done. It's just like a brand new black surface street, but it'll seal a lot more cracks and holes. It's not the overall surface of the street. It needs to be pretty good, but it's something that you want to consider if cracks seem to be going to be excessive. It's also something we like to see after two passes of crack sealing. So a crack seal job you probably want to do every year 3, year 7 on a new road, and come back on year 10 to do something like a slurry seal. The next level of maintenance will be an overlay. It'll be a little bit more expensive. Fix potholes and base failures. You might strip off the old pavement surface and get down to the base that's there if it's doing good. Or you might just overlay on top of the existing surface if you feel it's going to work. Then you can install an inch and a half to 2 inches of asphalt pavement surface to finish that off. Then the next one is a rehabilitation. There's $4 signs here. It's not nearly as expensive as reconstructing on the street. It's probably on the order of half of full reconstruction. But what we typically do there is mix the pavement surface material into the base material. So you take a drum mixer that's got tines on it, and you can set how high the tines are. You mix up the pavement surface into the base material. It creates a real fine powder. And it does have some aggregate rock in it, and then you typically add lime or asphalt, or asphalt emulsion. There's three different ways where you can add strength to that base material. Compact it, bring it to the moisture content that we want to see, and then come back and install that inch and a half to 2 inches of asphalt for a new driving surface. So, M&S, we're ready to. We want to be your partner. We want to continue to have a strong relationship with the city of Kirby. And we look forward to doing more work with you. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them as to the best of my ability.
Okay. Did the staff have questions when this was going on as far as working with Gilbert and figuring out what our best course of action might be?
No, one of the things that once they completed it, we did meet with them to go over first draft. And
And so if you'll look at Exhibit F, I think for us that's the most critical piece as we're working on budget, because what they did do was lay out the next 3 years, 2021 and 22. M&S asked us for a recommendation of about how much we thought the city could realistically afford to take on each year. So just based on the average dollar amount we've been spending on street projects annually outside of the ones that are already ongoing, it was about $400,000. So that was the number that we gave them to work with. So that's how they broke this out. So you'll see that for 2020, it's those first few streets that they're proposing. And then they broke out within that year which of those methods that he just mentioned. So that first year, there's a rehab to one street and then slurry seal on several others. In 21, they did the rehab streets and then the crack seal and so forth. And then they even went beyond really the 3 years and gave us another 5 years because we realized that we can't accomplish all of these streets within a three-year time period. So what we're going to have to do is look at, of these streets, how council wants to prioritize them and which ones are going to fund over these next, this next fiscal year for sure, while we're looking off budget.
Well, let me, Mike Weinberg, we went 5 years total. We just added two.
Five total.
Beyond that. But we have all the data. We can adjust the list if you need to, if that's what you like. We typically, at this stage, put a 20% contingency on these numbers. So these are high for right now. And then year to year, we add 3% as an inflation factor. So you're seeing $421,000 for 2020. Realistically, you're probably not about 15% of that off. It just depends on the circumstance, on the economy, on materials, what's going on at the time, on how contractor prices can be.
And another thing to add that we did talk about in our public report is that the city owns a crack sealer. So some of these, just be a cost of additional materials, we may be able to move up some of those proposed crack sealing projects up to the current fiscal year.
Also, with each year, when you're aware that you can increase the size of the amount of the project up to 25%, so that allows you, if a bid comes in low, you can add some more length of street. You can go block to block with some of this stuff. But the city staff has access to all that data on the web. They can look and see if there's a street that they want to pick or if they want to come back to us and have us help them add additional streets. That's something we would love to help you with.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll move to item 7C, quarterly update from the City of Kirby Economic Development Committee. We have our chairperson, Ms. Jackie Jackson.
Good evening. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And this is more or less a review of what we've been able to accomplish during the quarter. First of all, we had a successful Kirby Business Alliance meeting on June 12th, and that was on a Wednesday. Mia was the sponsor, and at that time we had a chance to network and also free appreciation for a brand new Kirby business and also for a well-established Kirby business. So we continue to have that program on an ongoing basis. We have a certificate, and then we take photos, and then they're for that appreciation update as far as the commitment that we have. As far as our budgetary product on projects, we have gotten the TxDOT approval for our FM78 signage.
That's a new.
Yes, a council person, Lyman, has been really working very hard with Mr. James Grossbeck, who has Grossbeck Masonry, and he is going to actually install, build that particular signage. So we are finally over that hump, and we should have that completed before the end of the fiscal year. And after that, then we will then determine the type of lighting that we'll have. We have that as, I think, an example of how we want to promote the city of Kirby. We have identified other areas where at city limits we do want to have other types of signage that represent coming into Kirby. So that would be ongoing for the next fiscal year. We also continue to support the website, and we really, really want to continue to build that so that could be a very great cornerstone for people to be able to find out not only what's happening with economic development, but the whole city of Kirby. And lastly, we continue to have our facade program, and that's been a cornerstone for the past 4 years. We have a business that applied, and we are in the process of reviewing that business, and there are a couple of updates that need to be continued. So we are also proposing that for the fiscal year 2019-20 to 2020, that we continue to ask the City Council for support of $10,000. And our $10,000 would go again towards signage, the Wi-Fi, and also the facade program. We also have had a chance to, again, we will continue to have now, I think, the evening business alliance meetings on a quarterly basis. Our next one will be in September. There was one request that we had inside, so we will find a location that we'll have that. And we continue to work with our businesses. We've engaged some potential economic development opponents in the land, and also with Grossbeck Masonry along the lines of looking toward helping them find apprentices, because a lot of the trades are aging out. So we need to be able to have interested individuals who will continue. And of course here, the Grossbeck business has been here for over 30 or 40 years.
Just glad the sign's going up.
Yes, so hopefully.
That's a good thing.
Yes. And I think you break the ice with that, it'll be faster for the other side.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, item 7D, designation of three council members to attend the Texas Municipal League 2019 conference, October 9th through the 11th, 2019. This year's conference is in San Antonio, so it's right here.
So do we volunteer?
You can.
I'll go.
You
gonna go?
I'd like to go. Okay.
You gonna go?
Yeah.
All right, we have you.
Well, I'll go.
All right, so if somebody wants to make that motion for those three individuals?
I'll make a motion that Councilmember Mike Grant, Councilmember Sylvia, and Councilmember Lehman go to the TML conference. This year, it's right here in San Antonio.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Lehman, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to have Councilmember Grant, Councilmember Apodaca, and Councilmember Lehman to attend the Texas Municipal League 2019 conference, October 9th through the 11th.
Did I get a new shirt?
Since it is in San Antonio, are there any pop-up things where somebody could just hop into one of those events?
Sure.
There are
some
functions, and in fact, the Northeast Partnership is going to host one of the events Thursday evening, and so everybody will
invite to that. So but like during the day, or is...
A lot of times you go get a credential.
Do you run into the issue with a quorum then? I mean, I know we're saying three, but...
Typically the three had been for budgeting purposes, but really more.
Right. I just wasn't sure if there was a specific three, since I mean I knew that obviously there's not rooms that are necessary, but I didn't know if there was
daytime events that
I was just curious if they had like a list of things that they actually published before them, because I know everything's not necessarily relevant to our city needs, but
yeah, they'll give you a little pamphlet. We'll get it soon.
Yes, ma'am. You can get a prelim thing.
All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by a motion by Councilmember Lehman, seconded by Councilmember Grant. Further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right, item 7E, update, discussion, and possible action on Benzingelman Road reconstruction project. Hi again.
Same news. Nothing has been done.
Really?
Signs. To complete the punch list items to proceed on to phase four now. I have one of the emails was from, I'm going to read from you to you from June 27th. This is from Roy Heath to Mark Hill. To Mark, we have checked out with both the suppliers to get the signage up, but everybody is backed up and keeps getting delayed with the rain. Can we please move traffic control out of phase 1 through 3 while we wait for our installer and move into phase 4 and begin work. So the project is sitting for 2 weeks so the sub can get to us. The signs that are currently there are in great shape and functioning as intended. Can we please not keep the project on hold until our sub can come install the signage? The inactivity will only further infuriate the residents, please.
You think?
So then a reply on June 1st says the sign should have been completed by now.
Is that July 1st?
Yes.
Okay.
The signs have been completed, should have been completed by now. They were on the punch list. We have discussed them in the field at least twice, and we would like to proceed, but we have to complete. While we would all like to proceed, this has to be completed before the city can issue an NTP for phase 4. So that's the communication that's been going on. There's further communication again from Mark again. Last we heard that the signs would take 2 to 3 weeks to fabricate. This was on the 11th. Just got off the phone with Edwin, the superintendent, when he spoke with the fabricator. The fabricator is making all the signs for the project and is looking at the end of next week for delivery to SAC, and SAC will need to install. So in the next week, they should get the signs, which means the following week they should have the signs up. And once they do that, we'll do another walkthrough
That's what I was going to say, because I know that all the pylons, I don't know if it's people are just intentionally running them over or, you know, because...
They got the whole block.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. What?
No, he was saying he didn't see me, did
he? Well, no, somebody's
here. And I did notice that is still in front of yours, you know, the going back and forth, so...
You know, everybody here knows that this has gotten to be, it's past funny, but it has to be funny because if it wasn't, we'd cry. You know, this is unfortunately, and I hate to say this, but, you know, if they want to shoot me, it's too bad. This is what the state demands, that we take low bids. Trust me, folks, we have to take low bids or throw it out and start all over again. So when these things happen, trust me, it's not our total choice to do it. But we can keep throwing things out and keep it out, and, you know, and then that delays it. And this is not an excuse. It's just trying to maybe explain to you a little more about the process. And then we have remedies that our attorney has tried to help us with. And the bad thing is this young person just flat ignores it. And simply of not taking him beside the woodshed with a baseball bat, we don't really have a lot of left to do, except maybe not paying for a while. There's some things. But unfortunately, it's affecting the quality of what we're getting. This man here is put up with more. I mean, he's babysit this. He held his hand. I've tried. They've had meetings. And see, what's scary is, and I know this sounds, I don't know how, but see, my block is next. Whenever this guy gets finished playing with what he's at, they start on my block. And not that I'm going to get any special treatment, I'm probably going to get worse, actually. But I want you all to know that we are trying to spend your dollars as wisely as we can. And sometimes we're forced into situations that when he's standing up here with his hands in his pockets going, oh, gee, yeah, I'll get this done for you, and we buy it because he looked honest, and he did. And it's not that he's dishonest. The fact is that we're second on the list because there's other projects he's got going, okay? And because of the fact that we want a first-class job for our first-class dollar, we're standing here, and this poor gentleman right here is continually have to face us every week. The messenger's doing the best he can. Our attorney's doing the best that he can. You know, so bear with us. I promise you, one way or another, it'll get done by hook or crook.
So we actually seen any proof that they actually did start fabricating them? Other than his email to say, I've started? No? Okay.
Do you know, is it Flasher that's doing them? Or do you know who the contractor is?
The contractor's supposed
to
be Flasher.
Oh, good. Really? I know people at Flasher.
So if they get it delivered on the 19th, if the end of next week, we're just going to...
We can expect for them, depending on what time they can get it delivered. If they have other projects going on and they're allocating all their employees to another project, they're not going to sit there and wait for them to get the signs and then say, okay, let's put off this project and go. So if they were to get the signs on the 19th, it would be best for them to start on the 22nd on that Monday.
Right.
Yeah.
Putting everything out. And again, it just depends on how many people they allocate to the job, how many people they put out there. That's all up to them.
What's the quantity of the signs? I was trying to figure out the other day. Is it 10 or 15?
I have to look that up, sir.
That's right. I know. I mean, you know, but it doesn't take a rocket science to dig a hole, put cement, stick a pole in. All it takes is the right height.
Yeah, the right height, 7 foot.
Yeah.
The whole nine yards. That's about the concrete in the ground, the pole set, you know, and get the signs up. So maybe about 2-3 days to put down people on.
Too bad we can't find an Eagle Scout that wants a project. They do better.
Right, are there any questions? Any further questions? Nope. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you, Gilbert.
All right, item 7F, discussion and possible action on appointing up to 4 alternate members to the Building and Standards Commission. At this time, we have four alternate positions vacant with two terms expiring on October 1, 2019, and two terms expiring October 1, 2020. I don't have any applications here. Do y'all have
any? We just go ahead and extend those people on right now.
All right, so we will move to item 7G.
Gee whiz.
Discussion and possible action on appointing a member to the Beautification and Recycle Committee. At this time, we have one vacancy with term expiring on October 1, 2019. Are there any applications for that one? All right. We'll move to...
Sir, still one right here, yes, sir.
My application says for all committees, which I would meet. If I wanted to, you guys have been doing this for like 2 months at least, asking four persons?
At least three or four.
You got a green thumb? I'll paint it green. I swear to God, I will. In a heartbeat. Can we take him? Can we take him?
Yeah, we do have an application on file that you review because he's been appointed to two other.
Since he's asking for more information, though, I'd rather.
Plant.
Well, there's monthly street cleanups. They promote the beautification. They promote recycling. They do projects, the adopt a spot outside of City Hall in the flower beds, and they generally try to get in front of the residents to promote beautifying the city. Mm-hmm. They meet. They're a fairly active committee, just like the EDC. They meet regularly. They will be doing the Christmas lighting contest for December for the contest for the residents throughout Kirby. They participate pretty much in every city event and have a table or a booth there promoting their committee. And they meet monthly, religiously, correct?
And the entrance signs, they take care of those.
The first Tuesday, but I mean, generally they have quorums, correct? Yes, okay.
Where will it take you?
All right, so if anybody would like to make a motion for Mr. Hernandez to be appointed to the Beautification Recycle Committee, I will entertain that.
Make a motion, we accept Mr. Hernandez.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Lehman, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to appoint Mr. Hernandez to the Beautification Recycle Committee for a term expiring on October 1, 2019. Any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right, well, welcome to the Beautification Recycle Committee. I know they'll be happy to have you. Item 7H, discussion and possible action on appointing members to the Kirby Senior Center Corporation Board. We do not have any applications from the Senior Center. Have there been any that came through the city? All right, so we will move to item 7I, discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2013-731. Repealing existing Chapter 91 of the Code of Ordinances and adopting a new Chapter 91 entitled Animals to set out provisions as to animals, including an animal shelter, animal control officers, licensing, animal bites and animal care, spaying and neutering, rabies control, adoptions of animals, fees, enforcement, and related matters, and setting a fine not to exceed the amount set out in Section 10.99 of the Code of Ordinances for each violation. This will be the first reading. In our packets, we received what we had gone over before.
Right, and actually, it's not on your portal first reading, just for us to finalize any other changes or suggestions you all have so that we can bring the ordinance back next meeting.
I'm going to take that, and it's not for the first reading. It kind of concerned me.
Kind of like the first go over?
Yes, like the first go over.
But yes. Maybe start with the fees, if that helps. because there are some, on the very last two pages, it has our current ordinance reading schedule, and staff does have some recommendations for increasing owner surrender fees.
Absolutely.
Ashley, come up and give us a recommendation on those fees. And really, would you also explain to the audience what an owner surrender means?
You may have to talk into the mic because you have such a soft voice. And I think Ashley was being gracious when she said that people give their animal up to get adopted. I mean, there's times where they come in and their dog is sick, their cat is sick, they don't have the means to do it. So it's, you know, the shelter is supposed to be a magic place where there's just unavailable, you know, unending funds just to fix everybody's issues. I'm moving. I'm allergic after 10 years. My child now that's five is, you know, now allergic to it. I mean, there's all kinds of things when somebody's just ready not to have their animal anymore. And, I mean, there may be some that are truly hardships. However, the municipal shelter is not the place to do that. It is not a no-kill shelter. Unfortunately, we have not had to euthanize for space, but at the same time, as Ashley mentioned, it is a very limited space shelter. And so unfortunately, that may be an option that has to stare them in the face, especially if we continue to allow those owner surrenders with little or no oversight on it. I personally, in addition to the owner surrender fee being up, because I absolutely agree with that, I honestly think that there should be some kind of like an interview with that person. I don't think somebody should be able just to walk up and say, here's the animal, without doing their due diligence. There's rescues out there that are funded by, you know, that are truly nonprofits that may serve them better than tasking the taxpayers with, you know, a care of an animal that may exceed the entire budget. I mean, you know, a dog that gets hit by a car, you know, can go upwards to $5,000 just right off the bat just to go see. That probably just, you know, took out probably almost half of the vetting, or at least a quarter of the vetting that we set aside for animals. So I think in addition to the fee, I think that there should be another process in place too, that there's a review process with you, with the city manager, whoever.
We could do an extensive owner surrender packet now rather than just the one sheet. They fill out at least 10 pages worth of a packet before they are allowed to owner surrender anymore. We just implemented that. We're still going over it. Another problem we have with the owner surrender is a lot of times people want to owner surrender their aggressive animals and push their problems up on us because they can't control that animal anymore. And the best suggestion I have for them is, unfortunately, they need to be friends.
Well, if it's too aggressive for them, then how are you going to adopt it out?
Right, and then it goes, the shelter takes it in, and then it's not adoptable, so unfortunately, yeah.
That's a shame, but it does happen, I'm sure.
It happens more often than not, unfortunately. Probably. But sometimes they're not actually aggressive. Sometimes they're scared or they need training because they haven't trained them. They put them in the backyard and just expected them to all of a sudden become sociable.
Well, if you chain them up and you start chaining, they get aggressive immediately.
Mm.
I was going to ask that, yeah.
So we have our higher fee for litters, we have it at 75 versus 35. I don't know how much further we want to go about if you want to just do the 125.
Yeah, I mean, I would think.
I would think you'd make again, a
uniform. Right, because again, you have a litter of puppies that you get. You have to vet them.
Right.
Each one of them has to have shots.
Right.
And then if one of them gets parvo or something like that that messes your entire shelter, then you've now got another problem with all the other animals.
Well, circus and zoological is $200 for a surrender fee. So.
Oh, no, then 125 is nothing. Yeah.
Leave that one at $200 and the rest of these. Because you even have livestock.
I didn't look at
in
that.
The event we have them.
You got small animals, birds, reptiles. So if we move that fee to go straight across the board for a surrender fee, we still have livestock, circus, zoological, small animals, birds, and reptiles.
And again, we'd have to make it uniform, I would think. Oh, I'm sorry. We'd have to make it uniform. That would be the logical thing. I mean, if you're going to go with one, you've got to go with the rest because, not that I think we'd get. Hopefully, we don't get that many camels. But if we did,
well, I'm thinking even $200 wouldn't be enough for an elephant, especially if we have the training tracks right here.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't known of anything escaping across there yet, and coming over into Kirby. But we never know.
Yep. I agree. It should be a uniform situation. Just out of curiosity, what about animals that are not domesticated? How do you deal with that if we get something like that?
About rabbits, like coyotes?
Yeah. Okay. All right. I just wonder if we had a source. Yeah, as long as we've got an outlet, that's good.
We have lots of possums. Ashley's the possum.
Oh, yeah, I got one that lives next door, so I feed him all the time. Seriously.
I believe you because we have them.
Yeah.
We have them on Happiness quite frequently. So.
It's either feed them or my dogs go crazy, so. Yeah.
So your proposal there for the litter?
125.
Is that what?
Hopefully the mother keeps feeding them for a while, so only you're taking care of her. And maybe you can get them out in time. Reasonable.
And sometimes they keep the puppy and dump the mom.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yep.
Yeah. So is that from 75 to 125, Ashley?
Mm-hmm.
And is that for just all of them? Just three or more? Just saying, because sometimes you might get 12. So... Well, what is the average set of, so say the puppy is with the shelter obviously for 8 weeks. So at that point, what is the estimated shots? So that's just puppies, one puppy.
Just 250, yeah.
Between all of the four sets, two sets, the worming, spaying.
So we're already negative to begin with.
Yes. And it doesn't, and that's just anyway, because even with rates that are, you know, good rates or reduced fees, yes.
So it's a truly non-profit situation we're in.
without the nonprofit status.
Exactly. What you're saying. Yeah.
And no food has been included in any of this.
Oh, no, I got that too. I'm thinking about that.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Everybody save your newspapers and bring them. We need them. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, they need them for the pins. Oh, yeah, seriously. Newspapers, bleach.
Who looks at newspapers is what he was saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. If we look at it that way, I'm not. Maybe we do a head, like an additional.
Well, you want to. Well, I guess there's no. You would. Would you want to set like a like a, the mom. The mom and so many pups is 125, and then so much ahead after a certain amount.
I don't think so. Yeah.
What'd you think?
For three, that average out to like $41 if you divide it with 125.
Okay.
So if you do 35 each additional.
There you go. That makes sense.
Yeah, reasonable.
That's good math.
I just need, but it also needs to be something that's easily calculated. I mean, it's that you don't want you to have to spend that whole time to. Yeah.
I think that 35 after that is good. And I didn't realize that. But I know, like when you pick up a dog too, you give them shots when you bring them in too, right?
We normally do, yes.
And what's that? 250.
Second.
About 250 for when you bring them in.
But I do want to visit the neutered or unneutered. Just leave it as dog or cat.
Yeah, because if it's running at large, it's still a nuisance.
$65, $85. Do we want to up those fees also? The zoo animal is still the same, $200 on that. Our circus animals, excuse me.
We're trying to say an elephant would be expensive.
Yeah, because okay. It to me just
one, yeah, whether just, they're neutered or not, or whether they're altered or not.
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference whether they're altered or not. The offense is the offense
right.
In itself. So whether it's a dog or a cat, first offense you have at 45, second offense you have at 55, third 65, fourth 85. It's dog or cat. It's the offense. Whether it's a dog or a cat, it don't make a difference whether it's new.
Running at large is running at large, and they still do the same thing in your yard that you don't want there to begin with, whether they're neutered
exactly.
Or not. So yeah, it should be across the board. It should just be there.
So to fix that to make it the higher fee.
Yes.
Yes,
ma'am.
No,
you want escalation for yeah. Yeah. Because if you keep catching the same one, I mean, you know, yeah.
Well, as Ashley knows, there was one on our street. He's not there anymore, but he was neutered, but he was,
yeah, I was gonna
out
say.
All the time.
Yeah. And he still visited your front. He still saw your front yard, right?
Huh?
He still would visit your front yard.
He would actually visit our front porch.
That's when you get the water hose out.
No.
Water
he
hose
was
won't
a,
hurt.
No, he was a sweetheart, no.
Water hose is not going to hurt.
I think that we should also, just me, I don't know.
That's what I was going to say, impoundment fee. So
I was going to say, yeah.
Is the impoundment fee, I know it's first offense, but is that from the initial then plus those per day?
So when it comes to the impoundment fees, that goes to their how many offenses they have when they pick up. So say that says their second time, I think that's $65?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, it's
that's
55.
Right.
Okay, so
yeah.
Okay, that's why I was asking, because I was like, well, if it's $55 and the dog is there for 5 days before or 3 days,
you're gonna go on vacation.
You need to report that
Yes.
Well, you let the dog out, go on vacation, you got $55. That's a deal.
That's what they do at ACS, and their dogs get euthanized.
Yeah. On a microchip mandate? Yeah, it's the same thing. It ain't going to make a difference. So, dog or cat, just do the higher fee.
That's pretty lame.
It's $5 for it. Mm-hmm.
They get
don't make a difference what car I'm driving. If I run the stop sign, I run the stop sign.
And then they go reclaim it.
Well, also, I was curious about the quarantine fee. Does that take a lot more, right?
$250.
Flat?
Flat.
That's the 10 days?
Yes.
Okay.
Plus, is there that visit to go get the ring?
But you have to feed them every day.
So what do you think is maintenance, counting our technicians' time and food and the whole nine yards?
Our normal fee is $10 a day per boarding. I normally charge them $20 a day.
Okay.
Because it depends on
the
risk.
Okay.
But we also have the option to do home quarantine, correct?
Yes.
Wherever you deem it.
Right. They have to, the incident had to have occurred on their property, in their house, in their backyard, something like that, on leash. And they have to be current on the leash that in order to be home.
That's for home, correct? The other is when, and then you're going to do it anyway, the shot and the whole nine yards. So that would be two, that would be 25 a day. 10 days of 250, right? And are we breaking even or no?
I do believe so. I think it's about $60 for the vet bill and then $10 for the
range. Okay. All right.
And of course, I was trying to remember it's all the head removal. Do you remember what we did?
$100 for
it. Is we've been paying $100, so it's just that cost.
Right. Yep. And the lab is $20.
Okay.
Now, as for rabies quarantine, my dog has to be on a leash and have its current rabies tags, whether it's in the front yard or the backyard of my house. Has to be on a leash?
It doesn't have to be on a leash if it's in your fenced-in yard.
Okay.
You know, that's the other thing. Yeah, none of this more of under voice control. I would like to see that.
And that was one of the suggestions
we made.
That's
the same as the front, too. Because, I mean, I've got one that won't do anything.
That's what I'm saying. That's
yard.
Well, I think, you know, what I'm saying is when they're out walking, I've seen them under voice control walking, and the dog is doing this number.
No,
so he's not really under voice control.
Yeah. It was pretty vague, and that was one of our suggestions.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why I thought I read it like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. Of course, you got a 14-foot leash, too.
So are the shots, the cost for the shots, is that, because this has been in place for a while, is that still the shot, a charge for the vaccines given, is that fee still accurate?
If we have the vaccines available and we vaccinate when the animal comes in,
right? But that's what I'm saying, is that fee?
It should be.
It is, okay.
It is.
I only ask because since it was, yes. Since it has been a few years in between, I didn't know if.
Okay, and they have the notation here now on the city veterinarian that needs to be dropped because we don't have the partnership anymore, right?
That wasn't part of that anyway.
Well, I was just looking at it on here. It's.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That it wasn't because of that. Cause
oh. Okay.
That one was actually written in there anyway.
So it wouldn't have changed. I mean, this has been in place since 2013.
Correct.
So we probably do just need to make sure no expenses have gone up.
See, that's what I was asking because I don't, I mean, I know that when we do have the vaccines, they're bought in bulk.
Right.
But at the same time, I didn't know if per dose, if that went out. But since it's been 6 years, then.
Okay. I thought it was. At 125, it's not that.
It's just not set.
I was going to say.
It's not in the fee schedule.
Oh, then we need to put it in, I would think. Okay, I got you.
Okay, but let's talk about that fee.
Excuse me for a minute.
So 125 is, I mean, fairly inexpensive to adopt a dog that gets altered and vetted completely. So, I mean, that's, is that something that you wanted to look at to increase, or? And I only say that because there could be a dog that's already come, that already came in, that is already altered. So then that fee wouldn't be, I mean, that fee wouldn't be included because that wasn't a service that we had to provide.
Brian, we already had the statement made of $250 to that inanimate. And that's when a comment came out that we're, it was like we're behind the ball. Mm-hmm. So if we're taking $250 to vet an animal, adoption fee is $125 for a dog, which is going to be based off the animal being neutered, not neutered, and different things being done. We've got heartworm test here, Bordetello, a bunch of other things going on. So if it costs $250 to vet an animal, and we're adoptable, the adoption fee is $125 for a dog or $80 for a cat. I mean, there's going to be a loss no matter what. So we still want to be able to provide somebody who's looking to adopt an animal
affordable
out of a shelter, being any shelter too, you know, something that's affordable enough for them to be able to come and pick up an animal. So, I mean, that's, if you go to any animal shelter, what's the average fee? I mean, ACS is how much?
They're $86.
So,
and if they're on the euthanasia list, they're $25.
So we're already in that ballpark, trying to keep that to where we can bring an animal in, take care of it, and then let somebody else come in and adopt it at $125. That's pretty expensive to me. But to me, $125 is reasonable if you can get the person in there. And that just tells me that they're really serious about wanting that animal too. So I think, I mean, I'm sorry to say,
so
but
leave it.
I know where you're going, and you're correct. You're absolutely correct.
So I would leave that at $125,
so
and
dogs,
$80 for the cats.
So dogs $125, cats $80.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Is there a reason why it's that's why
it's way cheaper than cats. The surgeries are cheaper than it
takes 2 seconds.
Try to catch a cat? You ever try to catch a cat? Really?
No.
No, it's two different ones.
That's still cheaper for a cat.
It would probably be those. We haven't had any concern from potential adopters on these.
I mean, it's like,
just to make sure we put this into the ordinance along with what
we said. Okay, so $125 for a dog and $80 for a cat. What else you have?
I wanted to look at the cluttering laws. I know we're jumping around.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Peril?
Second.
I went, which one?
Tethering.
Oh, tethering. No, anybody puts a dog on a short tether, you just shoot them.
We may also need to define shelter because a shade tree or a tree with leaves.
And turn around. Mm-hmm. That works. Yep. And also, the type of tether, we're not going to put the pit bulls with a 20-pound chain on them. Well, is it?
Yeah,
I didn't know if it defined it. I didn't see the word defined
it's
the tether.
It's under restraint.
Oh, there. Maybe that's where I need to go.
A chain, rope, tether, leash, cable, or other device that attaches an animal to a stationary object or trolley system or a substantial fence.
That's what I was asking.
Page six. That was just the definition, yeah.
Oh, that's restraint.
Yeah. It's just the definition.
It doesn't tell you. See, it doesn't tell you whether it could be. I've seen poor pits out there. Why is it they think a pit's going to run off with
50 pounds of chain attached to it. It's
well,
kind of
there's
dumb.
Also a law against it, like an actual law.
But I mean, this is pretty innocuous right here. It does not give,
right.
You know, that's what I'm saying. Because we had when they moved and they had a pretty little pit. And I mean, the chain was one inch lengths. You know, that's just too much. And it had worn a groove into the dog's neck.
All tonight, so these are just brainstorming.
Yeah, no chains over. Like I'm trying to think. I guess you would say a gauge. I guess would be the best way that you gauge the size that the links are made out of. You know, like a 16th or an 8th or some or whatever.
You have your dog on a chain. You don't need to be having a dog.
For a wire.
Thank you.
So 4-gauge or
yeah.
Something like this.
Correct.
The link itself is a stick. 8-gauge would be just a. A bit smaller than that and back and forth.
Okay, so the higher the number, the smaller the gauge, correct?
But that's a person that, if they're doing that to that animal, they're doing that for a reason.
Okay, but and something else.
Not.
What about the length of the tether? I've seen dogs that were on like a 6-foot, and they're neurotic in about 2 days.
It says it's not at least 10 feet long.
Oh, 10 feet on there, that's not too bad. But that's the end, as they say, that's the end of their rope. And when they reach it, they see you. Well, I just hate to see a dog tethered anyway.
That's what I say. You're going to chain your dog up. You don't need it.
You don't need
I'm
it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
just
no.
Don't.
I know.
And because we show between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6
a.m.,
yeah.
In excess of 3 hours, or in the case of extreme weather conditions, which she brought up, such as outdoor temperatures below, heat advisories, storm warning issues, National Weather Service.
Okay, so Ashley, if you want to give Monique just those like brainstorming here, if you want to give those to her, then when it comes back, then we'll have those other pieces in it, and that's something she can send out to so that we can get that.
Well, put your knowledge to work and what you think works best. Just understand, you know, that people. I don't know why there's people they have a dog because they think it's cool just because I have a dog. And that's it. They never pet it. They just let it be there. And it's just, you know, dog goes bananas.
Big links on certain dogs.
Yeah.
And I would like to, we talked about this previously, I would like to make it mandatory that we have to microchip our dogs.
Agree.
And or cats. San Antonio has that. Ashley can attest to how many dogs run at large that are not chipped, so she has no idea.
Yeah.
There's two right now, that recent ones, that haven't been reclaimed, correct?
Correct.
So, you know, there's no, not even registered. It's not even that the animal was chipped and wasn't registered with a chip. It's just the dog has no chip.
Yeah.
I think microchipping would be more important, so if it gets out again, you know exactly where it goes back to.
Exactly.
Being, if anybody finds it.
Yeah.
I just had a hearing test. I thought I passed it, but that one's getting to me.
You heard it, so it passed.
Yes. It keeps sending me things in the mail, though. I guess they think I'm deaf. Anyway. But, you know, this is a hard thing to do because you're damned if you do and damned if you don't because not everybody agrees. But, you know, I try to treat my animals not like kids, but like, you know, they're part of the family. And you take care of them like you would anything else, you know.
So even though we don't have go ahead.
No, I was just going back to the fee. I don't see the owner pickup fees. I know that's on our paperwork, but that's not on this schedule either, is it?
It's not.
On the what fee?
Owner pickup fees.
Would that be the impoundment fee?
Yeah.
No, that's the...
Because that would be picking up.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know what, though? Maybe that's, maybe we just clarify that to include that so that it's...
That's what you pay when you
right, when you come back for your reclamation to reclaim your animal.
There you go. Yes. I mean, we did feed it and we did house it. Yep.
But is it, I thought that there was a Texas statute for the shelter. But it had to be a vet because the vet has to inspect.
Well, and I know like our ordinance says the city veterinarian has to inspect.
Right.
But technically, we don't have a city veterinarian.
And I would think that that would be the one we contract with.
Yes.
Maybe.
That's what we did before.
That was the other thing I was going to suggest, and maybe that word had changed to that, contracts with
right.
The way it reads, it makes it seem like there's an employee on staff who's leaving.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Maybe then we just changed the wording, deemed by, or the one that they utilized or something, yeah. So that it doesn't say city.
At the pleasure of the council. How's that? Well, it's just a word.
I really did. I thought there was something that, which is why it was written in here. I don't know.
It's not.
There was, even though we don't have TNR, like set up now, I'd still like to keep it in the ordinance, but maybe not. I mean, I think it does. I mean, it does specifically say as funds are available, but I would hate to remove it completely just for the fact. I mean, it's my hope that we'll be able to at least obtain a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think we've applied for 2 grants so far this year for that program.
Right. And then we had made changes, suggested changes before. So, I mean, maybe we just go with those and then at least give staff something to go by. And then, of course, after the meeting, you know, if Ashley comes up and, you know, y'all have other conversations surrounding that, then those can be put in so that we can do that.
What do you think at the present? You have a pretty good template to work with? Okay. Okay, yeah, that'll work. Yes, ma'am.
For endangered dogs, I was wondering what they can be endangered. Do we want to keep them in the city?
Wait, I'm sorry, can you say that again?
We've only had one case so far, but my question is do we even want to permit them in the city?
Are you talking about a breed or something like that? Oh, it's just after they bite someone and the city has that the same thing. They you have to put up if they after the first bite you have to put a sign up, you have to do set a bond, a whole lot of things. Yeah, that's not addressed. You're right. We need to look at that. One that has bitten someone is what the way the city of San Antonio.
Well, I know,
yeah.
But your dog can bite you and not.
Oh, yeah. No, it's yeah in the house. Yeah,
well,
mine bites me all the time.
And
because they had, not because of breed.
No,
specific breed,
action.
Because of the action.
Yes.
That they had to go
back. Yes. Well, I can tell you what happens in San Antonio. I have a friend that just went through that. He has had two Rottweilers, and they decided to take down the fence between them and the neighbor, and they eradicated the neighbor's three dogs. It's cost him about $2,000 so far. Yep.
Oh, you know what? Sorry. There's actually a whole section for that.
Yes. Did you get to it?
Yeah.
Where's that?
It's on page 17. It actually says the municipal judge shall hold such a hearing and shall determine at the hearing if the animal specified in the complaint should be ordered to be kept muzzled, kept within a sufficient enclosure, removed from the city limits, or destroyed for the protection of the public health.
Yep, sure does.
Yeah, he already has that discretion.
Yeah, and also you have they file a sworn complaint.
And it says shall receive testimony at the hearing concerning the incident under investigation. To order the removal or destruction of the animal or the muzzling or keeping of an animal in sufficient enclosure for the public health, safety, and welfare, the municipal judge may find that the animal attacked or bit a human being or attacked or killed another animal.
Right.
The animal is the same animal that committed the act in parts one of the subsection. Destruction or removal of the animal is necessary to preserve the public health, safety, and welfare. So I think that that's...
As in dwelling, this house?
You want to define the structure. What are we supposed to be looking at?
No, I'm thinking that you may need to add something in to define what the structure should be.
All right, well, get those ideas dwelling going,
home.
And then...
you're the lawyer. We're both looking at each other with the same question. When somebody's putting that out there, it's like, okay, well we're supposed to define it.
Get your thesaurus out.
It's been a long time since I looked at this ordinance. I can't remember how long this ordinance has been on the table.
Forever.
2013.
Consideration.
Yeah.
I remember going through it and redlining it and getting it banned.
Yep.
And then not seeing it on the agenda.
Yep.
Well, then see if we can get a definition on that. See if we can get a definition on that and then put it back to us so we can take a look at it and see what this definition is.
Well, that's why I said it's not going to happen tonight. That's why if we're just brainstorming, we can...
Oh, but I think it's a good idea that where we're at, because if we don't, we'll never get settled.
Right. No, it'll come back, but I'm just saying...
And that's under section 94.14.
Right.
What else?
What?
Yeah.
I didn't do that.
Okay. All right, so if you can get those definitions and then... put it all in the order and bring it back. Maybe in the first meeting in August.
About right.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That way, so it's a thorough, so it's we're not having to work on it again. That way, if we can get it back sooner, though, it'll give us time to review it before the meeting so we know what we're looking at. All right. Anything else, Ashley? All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, you know what? You have to stay up here.
Oh.
Sorry. 7J, discussion and possible action on Kirby Animal Services training manual policies and procedures. Okay.
That's why you wore a tie.
No.
Copy of the draft training manual? Is that what we're discussing?
Yeah, it's in the Dropbox.
So just kind of give us the background of the training manual.
Can the mayor open his hand first, please?
Sorry.
Yes, discussion and possible action on the Kirby Animal Service Training Manual. I did.
Take it away. It's all yours.
You can listen to the minutes. I did. just until it's...
Chief West actually worked on it without just wanting to come to council, have a chance to start looking at it.
Okay.
Everybody can provide feedback.
So you have the draft copy there.
Well, Mayor, make a motion that we go ahead and table this until...
I have a motion by Councilmember Grant.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Lehman to table the Kirby Animal Service Training Manual Policies and Procedures. I will ask our City Secretary, please call roll.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Akabaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right. Thank you. Are you staying here for that?
Well, you want to do the next one too?
All right, we are moving to 7K, discussion and possible action on private development projects on Springfield Road. Mr. Romans.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The property, Springfield Road, I was looking at the planning and zoning on the city website. It's color-coded orange, correlates to light industrial. It's not labeled light industrial, but I'm assuming that the color coding is industrial adjacent to residential property might not be your best planning. The city might want to consider engaging with economic development, directing planning and zoning, consider zoning change to this property so it's more accommodating to the residents that are abutting up to that property. It would be changed to C1 or multi-use residence. Then it would be probably not such a mess over there with the residents having to deal with that kind of line. If it's light industrial, the property owner is using it for the right thing, but it's not a convenience to the adjacent property owners. I just want to, before you start the discussion, I just want to bring up these points. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So, I had this brought up to discuss. Obviously, we've heard from the residents prior to, or the last meeting, and prior to that, several of the council members have also expressed their concern about the way that the property was going. So, I had asked the city staff to give us a timeline of exactly how all of or certain things transpired, and also what it was zoned, because as you know, the property was bought prior to it becoming Kirby.
Yep.
So it was already, it wasn't annexed, it was purchased prior to that. So I had asked what San Antonio's, what they had zoned it as. And theirs was light industrial district, which is L.
Yep.
The light industrial district provides for a mix of light manufacturing uses, office park, flex space, and limited retail and service uses that serve the industrial development in the zone. Examples of permitted uses include auto alarms, radio, sales and installation, cabinet, carpenter shop, can recycling collection station, lumber yard, building materials, machine shop, broom and brush manufacturing. So that's what San Antonio had that listed or zoned as to begin with. And so obviously we don't have an L, but it was taken to PNZ and they rezoned it to something as close to that L as possible, something that fell within the structure that Kirby already had. So now fast forward to the situation we're at now. As Ms. Shuler mentioned, It is nonstop during different hours of the day. It is clanking. The property is overgrown. There isn't, they're backed up. The property, there's trucks literally backed up to Ms. Schuler's back fence. And if you're, and in that, there's also, where that is, there's also utilities that run through there. So even if you were, let's just say it was an alley, instead of them utilizing from their fence line, even giving a space between it, they've got everything backed up right to the fences. And there's overgrowth, and as Ms. Schuler mentioned the last time she was here, she's unable, as all the residents are unable, to maintain the back of their property, like everybody else is and like our ordinance says. So our concern, my concern is obviously the noise, because it is not pleasing. It's not even aesthetic pleasing, and the sound is ridiculous. So I had asked for an interpretation of the noise ordinance. I can read what it says, but I'm trying to figure out if it's specific to a business of that sort, for the fact that even though it does mention business, there was some conversation that maybe the zoning overshadowed what the ordinance said. So maybe the ordinance wasn't really being able to be utilized because of the kind of industry that it was, that it would be impossible to adhere to this zoning. So specifically, it says that you can't work on the weekends. It says Monday through Friday. So
if Mark, I may, Mayor, I was the noise abatement officer for the city of San Antonio, and I helped write that ordinance. And in all neighborhoods, the average decibel level of a neighborhood is 46. The highest rating the city of San Antonio permitted was 80 decibels, and that was for the river and under very certain circumstances. Also, it has to do, as Ms. Schuler said, with vibrations. And I can tell you that anything over 90 decibels, which is the backup alarm on that there, it's rated at about 90 to 95 decibels. That is a continuing aggravation. The thing is this, that we're saddled with, as I see it, for whatever it's worth, we weren't prepared when we wrote a noise ordinance for this type of situation to come up. So I wanted to ask our attorney, I know that from my experience with the city of San Antonio as the noise abatement officer, that it's a health and safety issue, and anything that comes under it is health and safety, so there's no grandfathering. And I'm wondering if we can look into at the least a couple of things for this gentleman. One, to require at least a minimum of an 8-foot noise barrier, not to be vegetation, but to be a solid type of a wall, if you want to go that way, okay? Also, to adhere to being able to, decimal meters, you can get handheld decimal meters all day long, and I used to be the FTO, so I can show any officer in 20 minutes how to use a decimal meter, okay? Now, with the city of San Antonio, the decimal readings were taken off the property. Like, for instance, with this instance, you could take readings from Springfield at the curb line. You could take readings at Ben Zingelman from the curb line. You could take readings from Mrs. Schuler's backyard inside the backyard. And I would like us, at the minimum that I would like to see that decimal level be reduced to is about 50. That's livable. 46 to 50 in a neighborhood is livable. Right now, I'm going to guess that if we went up there and took a decimal reading from her backyard, probably when he's running that bulldozer up and down with the alarm, backup alarm going off, you're probably going to average probably between 70 decibels, maybe 80. I'd bet money on it.
Now, is this during the week or the weekends?
This is during the, well, I was going to address the weekend. I'm going to say, that, first of all, if I read our ordinance already, the weekend is no, period. Zap. That's it.
So
Well,
if he's moving earth,
let me tell you something real quick. Yeah, with TEQ now, when I dealt with the water people, the commission, anytime someone starts changing the topography of land by raising the crown or lowering the crown and changing the drainage, they have to go to the state to get a permit. I can tell you that for sure. I don't care who it is. And over 1 acre, sir, I've just checked it again with them again. And the gentleman, the lady looked at it with TEQ from her global positioning and has already determined that he's cleared and moved trees that have changed things. Now, I know there's litigation, and it's up to the owner of the property to produce that sluice on the back side, which is going to drain to the south, I believe. And because of one property owner there, it's a court thing, so he can't complete that. And the state knows that. However, if you drive down Springfield just with the naked eye, you can see where the gentleman has raised the crown and almost the center. And now the drainage, he's changed it completely. Now, he did put up the barrier, the temporary barrier along Ben Zingelman, which was required, but it's not stopping it from eroding under the fence. And the dirt level, the dirt that's placed in the stuff right by Ben Zingelman is not clean. That's dirty fill, and it's possibly contaminated. You can see that it's not other, because he's also storing clean material also.
Maybe.
Just next to it. Well, maybe clean, that's true too. But for sure, you can see there's probably five piles that are 8-9 foot high that are reclaimed. Well, they're bigger now. I'm sorry, they're growing. I missed it. But the point I'm trying to make to you is there's state law that governs what this gentleman's doing, and then there's our ordinance. And I'm almost sure, and of course the lawyer, our attorney can tell for sure, that there's certain things we can do to promote the health and safety of the citizens that live there. And again, if we take a look at it and see that, because I know for a fact if it's under health and safety issue, then there's no grandfathering when we rewrite that. And it is immediate. It has to be within a reasonable amount of time that he conforms to what we want. And I think with the knowledge that I have experienced before, we should look at some type of changing the ordinance and having him put up a barrier of some type that's reasonable but yet protects our citizens on the backside. And we did have the discussion where we turned down him not being able to delete the sprinkler system. And again, I'll reiterate, because there's more people here, he reiterated that he's building a metal building. Well, there's some of us sitting right up here that when Art's upholstery caught on fire, which was a metal building, it melted the beams. And, you know, there's going to be furniture. There's going to be all kinds of stuff inside of this building, and that does burn. And the wind can blow a flame 300 feet like that. So my point to you is the gentleman did not, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, properly present himself to us as to what kind of business he was going to perform out of this place. It was supposed to be a dispatch. Well, dispatch don't park the trucks there. Dispatch doesn't put used material and new material there. That's, again, my opinion. And the health and safety of our citizens, I think, is utmost. We need to protect them. And if you can't sit in your house, you have to leave because the noise level is so high, then it's incumbent upon us to take action to alleviate that situation. So I would like to have our attorney and city staff look into the possibility of having an ordinance or amending the ordinance to put in a buffering zone or some type of buffering wall or whatever it takes to alleviate this.
It would have to be considered a sound barrier wall, just like that's there in Shirts. That wall's not flat because they could put up.
No, it has to break. Wall. It has to break it up.
Yes, it has to be broken up.
And if you'll remember, there's all of us a little bit older when they were building 281. Because I worked for a company, then I was just doing business with Zachary. And the nice little nuns from the Incarnate Word actually went out there and laid in front of some of the bulldozers. And that's why you see those walls on both sides there by Incarnate Word. And that you saw that they're fragmented so that it breaks up. Because a sound wave is a solid thing. And you have to take topography and building structure to break it up so it lessens the noise.
Thank you.
But is this a possible thing, sir?
So there's been a lot said tonight all over the map.
Yes, sir.
On this issue.
I know.
Let me try to.
Can I go back to my question, though?
I'm sorry.
Can I go back to my question, though? Can't. I just want to know why you're going to address everything else. I want to know if this noise ordinance can be applied to that business.
I think the noise ordinance can be applied to this business, but I'm not sure that the noise ordinance says everything that either Mr. Grant or Mr. Pierce have said it says.
Right.
Correct.
So we need to make sure that we identify what we can, what we have in place, so that we know what we can enforce.
Right.
Our code enforcement people ought to be the key people in that regard.
Right.
So that's, I think, the direct answer, Mayor. I want to start, though, that as someone who spent about 25 years on a suburban zoning commission, one of the things I always wanted to see in zoning was what I would call transitional zoning. So you have single-family residents, then you have non-single-family residents, then you have low-intensity business, like an office building, then you have a higher intensity commercial business like a retail center, and the most offensive or the most difficult use is light industrial or industrial.
Right.
It makes no sense to have a light industrial zone abutting a residential zone.
Correct.
And that is something that I think is reasonable to send back to your zoning commission to look at. Even if it can't change this use tomorrow, it can prevent a recurrence. In regard to an 8-foot sound barrier, a lot of local ordinances, I don't remember if this is in our Kirby ordinance or not, but a lot of local ordinances do require an extra kind of screening device, whether it's a fence or a wall or even a thick layer of landscape, but a serious, effective screening device between any property not zoned residential next to a property adjoining a property that's residential.
Right.
So whether we call it an 8-foot high noise barrier or something else, a screening device that will help protect the residential property is very much in order. It seems to me that probably belongs in the zoning ordinance, which means it would originate in your zoning commission. City manager could include on the next agenda for your zoning commission an appropriate item for them to look at adopting or making a recommendation to this council for a revision to the zoning ordinance that calls for an 8-foot screening device whenever a non-residential property zone land is next adjoining a residential zone piece of land and perhaps a more significant type of screening device, like a noise barrier or sound barrier wall, when any L1 property adjoins any residential property. I think those are very reasonable. I think those are very attainable. And I think those are very enforceable. The decibel readings are in your zoning ordinance.
Yes.
This local zoning ordinance, which was last looked at and changed in 2017, a lot of the changes were made based upon the zoning review, ordinance review committee looked at in detail for many of their recommendations, City of San Antonio ordinance. And I think it was looked at on the noise ordinance. I know I worked on redoing that draft a little bit. But right now, and the city manager mentioned this earlier, the restriction on noise, said in part, the subsection I think is the most relevant on this part of the discussion, is the erection, including excavation, demolition, alteration, or repair work on any building or other structure, other than between the hours of 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. on weekdays, except in cases of extreme and urgent necessity. That's what's allowed. And so, but this is only about erection, including excavation, demolition, alteration, repair work on any building or structure. So moving dirt on vacant reevaluate whether we should make it clear that if you're going to do anything that generates excessive noise, it can't be other than between 7 a.m. Monday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah, without, it's only with an exception. Yes.
So we do need to, you know, I think straighten that out. On decibel readings, the Kirby, I looked at two other local ordinances, as well as the Kirby ordinance after the city manager sent me this this morning. And the Kirby ordinance is the most detailed of the ordinances for similar-sized suburban cities that I looked at. And it has specific decibel readings. And the measurement is incredible, much better than I've seen in other cities.
Yeah.
So this says, in regard to a property zone L1, it says the making of noise which exceeds 72 decibels on property in the city, zone LI or P, when measured from property under separate ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So Ms. Schuler, if her property is adjoining this property,
exactly,
this decibel measurement can be made on the other side of the property line.
Correct.
Okay? But it's not 50, Mr. Grant, it's 72.
It is. Well,
and the measurement is 70 for property zone C1 or C2. It's 63 for the R zone properties R1, R2, and R3. So although I understand and definitely respect your experience that you described, I do think what we need to look at is to take another look at other ordinances, because the two ordinances I looked at, one of them was very, very limited. The other one, the only specific decibel reading I saw in it was 85.
Right.
That you couldn't have noise exceeding 85 that could be heard outside of the structure. So I think that we should look at these numbers. We should look at them in the context of the information you provided. We should also look at them in the context of some other city ordinances that we can locate so that we're in the same area.
I will tell you that San Antonio, now that what they've done, theirs is broken down into definitions, like neighborhood is like, it's, I know it's 46, and then the industrial go. And what I was saying is, it's a quasi situation what you're talking about, because they're butted, and that normally shouldn't happen. So you've got this decibel level on this side of the fence, and then you've got this decibel level on this side of the fence. So what's reasonable between the two?
Well, my bias would be in favor of the residents.
Mine too.
Okay?
Yes.
But we have to respect the fact that the businesses are there.
Sure.
Businesses do generate more noise, but there needs to be a balance. And the question in my mind is, if 72 is too high, which it probably is, what should it be? And I don't want us to make an arbitrary decision without having looked at other comparable communities and just see what those ranges might be and bring those back to the governing body for discussion and possible action. Those are the things that I think are what I would call a low-hanging fruit to deal with, to provide some relief to the neighbors. Another thing that might help is to look at, in some of the other language, the noise from backhoes, the noise from bulldozers. That's not the normal noise you want to hear from your backyard or while you're eating breakfast in your kitchen.
Right.
And it is a unusual situation to have a residential property abutting an L1 property, and we want to take that into account, but loud noise is loud noise, no matter who it's next to. And so I think it is reasonable to try to deal with this in a way in which we have done our homework to make sure that we're in line with, not necessarily identical to, but in line with comparable communities.
Yeah.
I think that they'll help our police officers and our code enforcement people in the enforcement of this kind of an ordinance. As I think our police officer here will tell you, that one of the biggest problems that police officers have, and Mr. Grant, you can probably confirm this as well, with a noise complaint, is that the officer doesn't hear it.
Exactly.
It didn't happen.
Correct.
In terms of being able to issue a citation. And that's frustrating, I know, to the folks who live next door.
But I tell you,
I was going to say that wouldn't happen because, I mean, it's constant. It's active. I mean,
What the solution that we came up with in San Antonio.
Write the ticket and let the judge figure
it out. Here's what we did.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying at this specific property, when the police are called, it's happening there. I mean, it's.
Well, but see, they're going to have to take a reading in order to just to verify.
But that's what I'm saying. Does this whole ordinance revolve around decibel?
All of them do. You just can't say it's noisy. You have to have a predication.
It talks about continued duration. So that's what I'm asking.
Mayor, I would call it cumulative.
Right.
I would say that there's a laundry list of things that are in thou shalt not.
Right.
Okay? It's in what's currently section 94.17, acts creating unlawful noises. And it says the following acts, among others not here in after enumerated, are declared to be noise nuisances or unlawful in violations of the subchapter, and it lists from A to
a long list.
It goes, gosh, almost from A to the end of the alphabet.
Right.
Still turning the
page. It goes to X.
It just goes to X. So Y and Z are safe.
Let me tell you something real quick, Mark. What we did in San Antonio, when you have it, we allowed the person to come in and file a written complaint that went to court. And the most we had was like barking dogs. We don't have this here too much. But in San Antonio, when a noise went like this, if we didn't see it, then the person could come in to the office, sign a written complaint, and they go to court.
And very typical approach. The problem is many, especially when it's residents next to residents.
Yeah, neighbor
to neighbor. What I have found is the person who is complaining wants to complain but isn't willing to sign a sworn complaint.
Yes, right.
So this is different. I think this is a situation
this clearly
where
isn't the case.
No.
Where the affected residents probably would be willing
in a heartbeat, I think.
But Mayor, I think what we ought to do, and I don't really want to delay any of the enforcement action, so I would suggest that when this noise is at higher levels, that either the code enforcement officer or a police officer is notified to take a decibel reading.
Do we have a
decibel
noise meter?
Reading is 75, to issue a citation.
Do we have a decibel reader?
I know where to get them. I can get one in a day.
We're not,
do we have a decibel reader?
Yeah. I get one in a day.
Well,
let's look at getting a decibel reader. I mean, I think what we need to do is work with what we have now to begin to start helping the affected residents, and at the same time be looking at ways to strengthen the thou shalt nots and spell them out more clearly. If we want to say you can't make this noise on Sundays, we need to say it in the ordinance. Right now, it doesn't really say that.
No, it just says weekdays because you got an evacuation and alteration.
It's limited in two ways. It's limited both the noise is permitted only between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. But this section begins with a phrase that ends with on any building or other structure, meaning that just moving dirt, which can you use heavy equipment that makes a lot of noise, there's no restriction on that, whether it's at 6:30 during dinner time or Saturday or Sunday morning.
May I say this real quick, Mark? The reason, Mayor, that you have a decibel level, it's like a speed limit. The law requires that you have a measuring stick. So if you're doing 40 and a 30, that's you're breaking the law. So if the decibel level
back
should
to,
be...
Back to who's breaking the law? The law enforcement officer that's speeding The EMS truck that's speeding, the fire truck that's speeding, or the citizen?
Oh, no, this is a different thing, though. Now, this has nothing to do with that. This has to do with
I know,
but just noise.
Make sure
noise
that
level.
We wrap it up in there, because, again, just like you, somebody dealing with all the stuff that's going on there.
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you is that
this guy came and changed what he said.
Well, I know. But so what I'm saying is you apply the decibel level to his business. I guarantee you that what you've already told me, the cumulative, is going to be way up in the 80s.
Yeah, 2 hours.
Huh?
2 hours sitting there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So all you got to do is take one reading. You've got it, just like radar. When you run radar, if he's doing 40 and a 30, you got it. If he's doing 80 decibels and a 72, you got it. And that's all you need. And it's a handheld. It's a little. It is so simple. It's not funny.
$4.
Yeah, well, it's 45.
Bucks.
Yeah, it's got high and fast, and that's what you set it on, and you just stand there and take the reading, and once it's established, you write the ticket.
I'd like us to look into something other outside of eBay or that. But what my question is it does this whole ordinance only revolve around decibel? Is there nothing in this ordinance that can help the residents right now? With the continuous beeping, with the continuous duration, with the frequent sounding of horns, signal devices, it says any automobile or vehicle.
Again, the language in the ordinance needs to be improved.
Correct.
Here's some of the things that are in the ordinance that are like what you just said. So this is one of those thou shalt not. The continued or frequent sounding of any horn or other signal device on any automobile, vehicle, motorcycle, bus, or other vehicle, except as a danger or warning signal. Well, when a backhoe is backing up and makes that ugly beep, that's really a warning or a danger signal.
Correct.
So, you know, some noise from a backhoe or a bulldozer, which is the beeping, is not a danger or warning signal. But how does the officer who hears it know which it is? The next one is the running of any motor of any automobile or vehicle, motorcycle, or other motor vehicle so out of repair or so loaded or so operated as to create loud, grating, grinding, jarring, or rattling noise vibrations. Again, it's close to what you're saying, but it may not be right on it, and a court prosecution needs it to be right on it. The discharge into the open air of the exhaust of any steam engine, stationary internal combustion engine, automobile, motorcycle, or other motor vehicle, or both, except through a muffler, that may come closest of all to the loud noises of the trucks, the truck motors, and things like that. And there's also a thing about whistles, bells, rattles, clappers, hammers, etc. There is stuff in here that can be used right now, but it will require someone to actually swear out a complaint, appear before the municipal judge, after the property owner, who is the originator of the noise, is cited. And it takes a regular enforcement effort. And that is what I think what I mean by we try to enforce what we've got in place now, but we also rewrite it to give the city more than the city, the affected parties, more ammunition to use to try and control the situation. So it's not just decibels, but as Mr. Grant said, decibels are like a radar. Decibel reading is like a radar reading. And so it's pretty hard to argue if you've got a working machine and a qualified operator, and it says 83 decibels, it's really hard for property owner to say, well, it was only 43. It's like arguing about the speeding ticket.
I said there is some immediate relief because Mrs. Shuler related that he's doing it on the weekends. Well, the weekends are out.
Well,
no, that's what, no. That's what it says because
he's I see with the building. Oh, I got you. That's right. I got you.
It probably wasn't the intent.
It wasn't.
But that's what it says.
I got you. Damn, you got me.
So, a lot of noise ordinances were geared toward the hot rod going down the street with the radio. And this isn't a situation like that. And so it's not a situation that is typically encountered again. So we need to work on finding a way to legally make changes that will give the balance that the neighbors need.
Okay.
Did we ever find out from San Antonio? Because technically we took this property over after he had already put everything in place with San Antonio to do this. So did we find any buffer that San Antonio would have had? Because if this was a San Antonio resident, we would be looking at something totally different dealing with San Antonio.
Well, you know what the sad thing is, though? San Antonio didn't care how they sell their property at that, or that guy didn't, because we didn't have, we couldn't make them. But now,
up against, so either way, you're still looking at the same problem.
Right.
So what was San Antonio going to do about it?
Nothing.
Well, yeah, because look where you would be at in San Antonio.
That's my point.
You put this property and changed it to do something that's completely basically hidden from people in San Antonio.
I know it's a thin line, but the guy totally misrepresented himself to us as to what type of business was going to be there. Is that anything? No. Okay.
Gotcha. I got my look. I got you.
I originally thought that property was presented to us was going to be a light industrial.
A dispatch. Mark has this smile, and I can see it coming over.
A strip center of small businesses,
yep.
And look what we got.
Okay, but even outside the noise, I mean, obviously the code compliance piece of it can take place. I mean, at the last meeting, Ms. Schuler had a letter from the pest service that said that there was an increase in rodent because of, you know, the way that the property was kept.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's something. And again, because they're not maintaining that area, her fence is literally bowing in towards the home because all of the
rubbish,
trees and all the rubbish, if you will,
that's
coming back.
Her fence.
That's something else that bothers me. Isn't there an easement back there?
Mm-hmm.
And the easement is from the property owners, the people, our citizens, from their back of their fence.
West.
Easement, and he's doing everything
on
the easement.
Right.
Well, that ought to be our first jump right there, is to go in there and say, look, you've got to get all of your stuff off of the easement, and it's got to stay off of it. Who's going to keep the easement clean? But, you know, I understand he tried to take all them people to court and said they all had to move their fences because it was on the easement property, and that's where I'm going to put my business. That was his statement.
And you're right. With the exception of one house, one house does.
They're going to go to court.
Right, but that fence does encompass that easement piece of it. However, everybody else's is right at that, so there is no space between that. They're literally backing up their vehicles almost to the back end of that fence, over that
easement.
Yes. So if you had that alley, that's exactly,
right.
Basically they're parking in the alley if
right.
You had another fence there.
Right.
So
if you use the easement, aren't you supposed to maintain it, or is the city going to maintain it?
It depends.
Okay.
Okay, and it depends on whether the easement was platted and what the plat notes say about it.
It is.
City, whose property is it on?
Well, I'll tell you what
what kind of an easement is it? Because if it's a utility easement, there are certain rules that need to be adhered to satisfy and to make the utilities happy.
Right.
And there are risks associated with not doing that. So it's very property specific.
Well, what I know that the gentleman said was when he bought the property and they certified the plat, okay, that all those people's fences were 10 foot into his property. And he hand-delivered letters to I don't know how many houses. I lost count. He hand-delivered them, telling them that he was going to sue them if they didn't give up the property. Now, there is a law in Texas I know about that if you accidentally or property is fenced and you maintain that property for 5 years and the owner says nothing, then it becomes yours. And I show you a case.
That's not correct.
Okay, then how does that work?
25 years.
25?
Not 5.
Okay. Well, actually, it is about 25 years.
It's an adverse possession argument.
73.
Yeah, well, no, Charlie's house has been there for 40 years.
73, yeah.
Yeah, 73. And so is, how long has your house been there? 70-something, wasn't it?
Early 80s.
Yeah. So actually, the 25 years has passed.
There are a bunch of rules that apply there. But now we're getting into an issue.
Okay.
It's really not a city issue.
Yeah, okay.
This is a property owner,
yeah.
And in regard to land use through zoning and similar rules, but unfortunately, you know, an adverse possession type argument, that's beyond the scope of what the
okay.
city really has a voice in. That's what this report is for.
All right. Okay. So where we're at right now is, if from what I understand, the fence line that the people have maintained, Mrs. Schuler, is on the edge of the easement as it goes from there west.
We're using words loosely.
Yeah.
I don't like to make decisions
okay.
without
okay.
seeing documents, seeing what's platted, seeing what deeds and other relevant documents
okay.
tell me in order to make judgments about this. The key factor right now that we've been talking about is the impact of the private development projects on Springfield Road.
Correct.
The impact on neighboring property, the impact on the city at large. The easement is kind of a stretch to get there
okay.
right now.
Okay.
It certainly can be looked at, but it's really not something that's directly relevant to this agenda item. And I think we talked a little bit about a couple of things that can be done, a zoning thing and a noise thing. I think it's going to be clear to the departments that do enforcement that this is an issue that the city council is interested in seeing some action done on, and that usually results in some action getting done. Meantime, we can look at reasonable changes made to this list of restrictions and rules in the noise ordinance, and the zoning commission can look at a recommendation to require a screening device between any property that's zoned R1, R2, and R3, and any property that's got a more intense use, whether it's C1 to LI, as first steps in trying to it first steps in a process to make life better for the affected residents.
I think you made the best statement, the whole low-hanging fruit. If we go for that first, it can build on that.
Yes,
sir. Okay.
So are they required to screen their fence? Similar to car lots and the air conditioning place that's right there when you come into Kirby off of Ackerman.
I'm gonna have to look at the light industry.
Well, certainly the quicker that we amend the ordinance, whichever way it goes, whatever title we put it under, because if it's considered health and safety, that beyond a shadow of a doubt I know is immediate, and there's no grandfathering. So however we can put it or where we can put it, the faster we can get it there, the quicker we can enforce it.
Is there any grandfathering anyway?
there may be some problems with grandfathering, with a property owner claiming a grandfather in regard to the screening device. I think we might have an easier time with the amendments to the noise ordinance. But if we don't start, we can never get there.
Right.
No, that's what I'm asking. If we change the ordinance or we look into it, is it say, oh, no, I was here before that happened?
If it's a zoning-related change, that is a viable argument by a property owner. But be that as it may, property ownership changes. And if we know this is something that's important to do, we do it.
Yes.
And it may take a while before it has a complete effect. Ultimately, it will have an effect. So I'm saying we start.
All right, but outside the decibel area, there's nothing in this ordinance that the residents have any relief from.
Well, I read you know, part, I have CD and F. They may be close.
Right, that's...
judgment call by the enforcement people as to whether they have enough, they feel comfortable enough to cite over the motor noise or the sounding of the horns, other than as a danger or warning sign. I'll look at the rest of this to see if there's another subsection that we might find to recommend to the law enforcement folks that they see if that's something they're comfortable with enforcement. Decibels are the easiest thing because it's a measurement tool.
Exactly.
I think for now, I do think that we should be looking at any angle we can look at.
Well, unfortunately, if we have to go through that, I see residents leaving and getting even more angry before all that takes place. So definitely it's something I think we should move on. So it just seems like with the stuff in place that even there should be at least something that they should have to be made to clean up their area. At the very least.
That's a completely different area than we've been talking about most of this discussion. Absolutely.
Well, it kind of got hijacked, so I...
Sorry. The affected property owner whose fence has been damaged by the neighboring property owner may have a cause of action against the person who caused or the company that caused that damage. To the extent that there is a health and safety issue involving rodents, and we in our code permits that to be cited, then the code enforcement officer can check to see whether there's enough evidence to do a citation over that. If there's any construction in a setback, that can be looked at. But we can't just do it because we want to do it. We need to have an ordinance or a state law that we're trying to enforce.
All right. Does anybody else have anything on that? All right. Well, we will keep plugging at that one. We'll move to item 8A, request by mayor and council members for items to be placed on future city council agendas and announcements on city events, community interests. Council member Grant.
I would like to get an answer for that, lady for the bust out platform. Is that if it's going to be VIA's responsibility or was it ours? I think VIA's the one that took it up.
Yes.
So can we address that, please?
Yes.
I know how that goes, but I mean,
get a
feel for it. Tell them exactly why it was there, so we put it back. And I'm so sorry, the gentleman in the back, the name of your group, please.
It's Urban Community.
Okay, I would like to see the put on the agenda and discuss and approve what they'd like to do. So that, bring that on the next one. And of course, I've got here discuss big boy hauling. I think we beat that horse smooth into the ground.
Oh, no, put it back on the next agenda.
Okay, put it on the next agenda. We're going to discuss big boy again, please. Thank you all for being so patient. My gosh, the patience of Job is in the audience. I'm appreciative of that. And thank you all for coming. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And Councilmember Lehman needed to leave, but he did indicate that he didn't have anything other than thank you guys for being here. Councilmember Abadaka?
I'd like to thank Christopher Garza for coming over to the Senior Center and helping and everything that you're putting on Facebook. I think that you're letting the public know a whole lot of things that they don't know. You're putting it out there. And I can see some people are responding, and just thank you for doing that.
Councilmember Pierce.
Nothing.
All right. Echoing what Councilmember Grant said, Ms. Clay's concerns, Chris, his stuff, but if possibly if maybe before it comes back to council, if maybe he can get with city staff, Gilbert, so that that can be mapped out prior to it coming in so that we know exactly, sorry, Gilbert. That piece of it, so that at least we know what can and can't be done, and you know, get all those pieces cleared. And Saturday from 12 to 2 at the Kirby Animal Shelter, the Penny Paws Low Cost Vet Clinic will be back. It will be from 12 to 2. I would like to ask for our next meeting, if not the next meeting, the very next one. In August, to ask the grant recipients to come back to council to report on what they were able to accomplish with that funding, especially since the budget's coming back up.
Have letters going out today for the first meeting in August.
Okay, awesome. And then in front of 5211 Ben Zingelman, I understand that obviously that's going to be one of the next phases, but I don't know if there's something that we can do as a city there, because with parking on that one side of it, the manhole has completely sunk in, mm-hmm. So you really would have to go into oncoming traffic in order to avoid it, because there's cars that are parked on there. And I don't know what this side is, but the other side is 5211. It's literally right in front of that, mm-hmm. Right in the middle. But unfortunately, because there's cars parked on that, you can't really go around it, and it's pretty deep.
Well, yeah, every day.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. And September 14th from 5 to 7 p.m., we will have a fundraiser for the animal shelter. It will be the Meowgarita Pour-Off. So there's information on Facebook for that. So that will be a fundraiser from 5 to 7 on September 14th. And also, if we can address Ms. Connor's concern about Allen Bean, if we can just go check out that area. Just to see what that piece is. And then I am the liaison for planning and zoning, and with a relatively new group, I think it's important that we kind of maybe have a joint meeting or something to bring about procedures and things that the council is looking for, and maybe to bring them up to speed on different avenues. Right now, the chairperson hasn't been able to attend the meeting, so there's all new people on there. So with all the committees and boards, if we can just circle back around just to make sure that we had talked before about having a joint group with everybody, so if we can possibly put that together soon, either on it doesn't have to be a weekend, but maybe a week night if that works better for everybody. We have some of our members here tonight, so thank you all for volunteering for those committees and boards. It's greatly appreciated. Our senior center had their board meeting yesterday, and so they're working on doing some additional things to bring awareness to the senior center. Just for, you know, everybody, it's not just a place for seniors. Food is provided daily. There's lunches. Different activities are not just for seniors. So that's one of the things that they're trying to bring into the public. So if you get a chance, they are always looking for volunteer opportunities. So you can contact Norma at the Senior Center and ask about those items as well. And thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. Thank you, everybody, for speaking and making your voices heard and coming up here. Thank you.